This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for listening this afternoon. We cover a lot of things on this program. Today, we're going to talk about wine in the Umpqua. Allie Rogers, Executive Director of the Umpqua Valley Wine Growers Association. Scott Kelly from Paul O'Brien Winery. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
So overall, Scott, how are things looking this year in the harvest for the Umpqua Valley?
Yeah, so far, you know, Kyle, the growing season has been spectacular. I think most of us know from you know, waking up every morning, we've had nice cool mornings at, you know, the mid-50s and the nice warm days. It's definitely been warm, but it hasn't been hot. You know, cross our fingers, we haven't had those big 100-degree spikes. We're tracking, you know, we measure based on degree days, and so every crop kind of has its measurement of ripeness. And we're ahead of average, certainly, but nowhere near our hottest vintage. And so this nice, dry, warm weather that we've had has just been spectacular for ripening. We started Verasion last week, and we predict harvest starting probably around the 10th of September.
As we get this close for a lot of people, though, I mean, did the forecast for next week, is that a little concerning?
Yeah, it's always a little concerning when we see triple digits, although my inside track to a certain climatologist in the industry tells me we may not get quite as hot, so let's knock on wood and hope that's true. You know, the vines are resilient. We still see active growth out in the vineyards, which is amazing to me considering we haven't had any rainfall measurable since May 9th. And so these grapevines are all primarily dry farmed. That means no irrigation from us. So we're really living, you know, with Mother Nature and what she gives us. And they're tapped into moisture deep in the soils, and they're resilient. And so in doing so, they're able to weather a storm, you know, such as a few days that may hit over 100 degrees.
And I know with when you get this close to harvest, you guys all get a bit nervous. Because sometimes, you know, something comes, and of course, everybody's not picking on the same schedule, different varietals, different parts of the Umpqua Valley. But you get that close to the end, and something comes along. You really don't want a hot day, and you get one. And then you've got to decide, do I go now or do I wait?
Absolutely. I mean, it's farming, right? So we are working with Mother Nature and trying to achieve the best ripeness, both in flavor, in sugar levels. And it's not just heat waves. You know, we're in Oregon. And so when does that first rainstorm come? And do you pick before that? Do you pick after that? And that really is the exciting thing that makes the differences in between not just the different varieties, but each winery. And so those decisions are really on the winemaker and the viticulturalist. And as we go forward, we try to make the best decision and then, you know, hope the best comes out for the vintage.
Now, when you talk to other folks in Oregon that are in the industry, how about other regions?
Yeah, other regions are seeing very similar weather patterns. So we're definitely warm and dry all the way through up in the Willamette Valley. They're way ahead of schedule, just like us. So I think we're probably 2 to 3 weeks early this year. And I'd say the Willamette's doing about the same, as well as the Rogue Valley. So each of the regions is certainly tracking ahead. That can change. We don't project anything coming our way, but certainly a few rainstorms and some cooling temperatures in those fall days is kind of what we hope for, to really extend out the ripening period. And that makes for more complex, more interesting wines.
So, Allie, a few months back you were in as you began your work with the wine growers. How's that going?
It's going well, Kyle. Yeah, it's been almost 3 months, I think, and we've got Greatest of the Grape under our belt, so that was wonderful. We've raised money for Sleep in Heavenly Peace. We just had our annual Umpqua Valley Wine Growers Summer Picnic, and that was a great time for the wine growers to get together and try each other's wines, eat some food, relax for a little bit before the upcoming harvest.
So what kinds of things are you looking ahead at with the organization?
Yeah, so we're going to reimagine some of our events, and that includes Greatest of the Grape, the Barrel Tour. We're going to see what we can do with those kind of coming out of a post-COVID world with some changes, and stay tuned for that. It should be exciting.
Well, it's kind of an emerging landscape in events in general.
Yes.
And so I know a lot of people are kind of shifting things and looking at new ways of doing things. Scott, what about tourism at tasting rooms? How's that been going this year?
Yeah, it's actually been good. I think we had a little bit of a fall off from the post-pandemic. Everybody was excited and out for a, you know, out to go experience the life again post-pandemic, and that was 2022. So we saw a lot of traffic in 22, both from tourists as well as locals coming out to the tasting rooms, which we encourage, you know, greatly. And things kind of dropped off a little bit at the beginning of the year, but then come June, July, which, you know, traditionally is our busiest months as we move into the summertime, we've really seen traffic pick up. And it's been a great year so far, and lots of exciting things going on at our wineries here in the Umpqua. And I think people are realizing the real true powerful nature and the excellence in the wines here in the Umpqua Valley.
So, Allie, what have you been hearing from people about tourism traffic?
So similar things that Scott was saying. You know, as a whole, you know, Oregon has seen, you know, a little downtour turn this year, but we're kind of hopefully not seeing quite as much here in the Umpqua. Also, I still feel that we're a little undiscovered. So we don't necessarily have the negative impacts that other areas do because we're still kind of on the uptrend. So.
And I know when I've traveled some in the past year, periodically somebody will say, wait a second, Roseburg, don't they like wine there or something?
Yes, surprise, surprise. Yeah, and original Pinot Noir vines from the Umpqua Valley, right? So yeah, still kind of getting the word out there. We have great local support, which we really appreciate from all the locals visiting the tasting rooms and patronizing them. But sort of one of my goals is to push outward, you know, further afield in the state of Oregon and then up and down the West Coast as well to get more visitors coming to the Umpqua Valley, more tasting room traffic for our wineries.
And Scott, one thing I don't know, and I don't always think about it until I realize I forgot to figure it out, is can you purchase, like if you're, you know, traveling here, you get family here, and they come out, they go to a tasting room or two, want to buy some wine, can they ship it back to wherever they live? I mean, because it seemed like at one point rules varied state to state and some of that.
Yeah, still do, without getting into a crazy conversation about post-prohibition law and states' rights. Every state traditionally has a permit that to direct ship. So a consumer actually cannot ship wine to a friend or something like that. Wineries, if they do have a permit to direct ship into that state, the winery can ship that wine for you. The other way to do it, which is an excellent program, is Oregon Wine Board has created a great program with Alaska Airlines. So Alaska Airlines allows Oregon wines to fly free. And so throughout the year, if customers come out and they're flying on Alaska Airlines or any of their affiliates, they can have their wines packed up at a winery and shipped back or checked as luggage, essentially. And obviously they get their wine on the other end as it comes out through the luggage carousel. So that's another great way to do it. But yes, most wineries will be able to ship to quite a few states, maybe not all of them quite yet, but each state has a different permit, and based on that, the wineries decide whether or not it's worth it.
So not any like national overarching standard then?
No, unfortunately, at the end of Prohibition, I guess I will get into it, the federal government said Prohibition is over and gave the rights back to the states, which in a lot of ways, states' rights is super important. But with that one thing, then every state created its own system for protecting alcohol crossing state lines, and that was through direct shipment permits. We've come a long ways, and certainly I think we can ship to 48 states now, but everyone has a different permit, and some of them can be extremely expensive.
Wow. And probably, you know, something that the average consumer doesn't know about, just like the question I ask, it's like, can I do that?
Yeah, quite often we get, you know, questions, oh, we had your wine, or we were out in Oregon, or we have a friend and we want to buy your wine, why don't you ship to us? And it said, well, you're one customer, and if you buy a couple bottles and it costs me $1,400 to have a permit in, you know, New Jersey, you know, it doesn't really make financial sense to have a permit in every state.
All right, something to keep in mind. We're going to take a break, back with more in a moment. Allie Rogers, Scott Kelly with us, and it'll be a podcast after one at 541radio.com, News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1240 AM. Lars Larson at 1 tomorrow. I am back live at the Douglas County Fair. We are going to go a whole different direction. We're going to talk about 4-H and FFA and the auction, and we're going to interview a bunch of kids out there and some of the advisors and organizers that make the program for the young people happen around the Umpqua Valley. So that's live from our booth at the fair tomorrow. Scott Kelly from Paul O'Brien Winery, Allie Rogers, Executive Director of the Umpqua Valley Wine Growers, in here this year. Now, Scott, every winery kind of has a different model, and talk about what yours is in terms of whether you have grapes or source or what you do.
Yeah, you know, we chose early on when I moved up here and started the winery with my partner Dyson, who owns Hillcrest. We started 10 years ago. This will be actually our 10th vintage. And really the concept was exploration. And I wanted to learn the lay of the land, learn where the secret gardens were that make the best wines, to develop sort of a knowledge base of what variety works well where. Now the next phase, as I've learned this, and Dyson has certainly been doing the same thing, is to try to invest in property. And so we're going to start trying to develop our own vineyards, still working with our amazing set of growers, because each and every vineyard has a different terroir and creates a different style of wine. So that's our model. There certainly is the estate model, which 100% of the grapes would be owned and controlled by the winery. And so I think both models are extremely valuable, but this gives me the ability to go to where the variety I think does best and not grow everything on one piece of ground.
How do you decide with the model you're using and in sourcing from other locations which varietals to put your energy into?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a kid in a candy store, because I've worked all over the world and made wines in, you know, Napa Valley and Paso Robles and Italy and Australia. I've had a lot of experience with different varieties. And as a winemaker, I'm fascinated with all the different varieties. You know, there's somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 grape varieties in the world that we could work with. There's different styles that you come across within those varieties. And so, you know, I wake up every day just excited to be able to create different styles and you know, think about wines. And I do that a lot through tasting other people's wines from around the world. And then it really comes down to what does well, you know, and choosing a site that's well matched. And we do that from our experience, from our knowledge, and certainly a little bit of trial and error. And hey, what does your neighbor do? Well, gosh, his wine or the fruit coming off of that vineyard, you know, on the hillside, that's the same elevation, same aspect, same soil type, is pretty darn good. And I like it. Well, that's probably a pretty good starting point to plant.
And but at the same time, for all that interest in exploration, it's a business and you can't just try anything.
No, definitely not. I think on the wholesale level, we do a bit of wholesale with our Oregon Territory label and the Paul O'Brien Pinot Noirs. People expect Pinot Noir from Oregon when we get out of the state. I think quite often at the tasting room, really it comes down to point of consumption. Does it taste good? And if it tastes good and it's interesting, we do well with it in the tasting room. But, you know, it's a little bit more difficult when you get outside the borders of Oregon to be able to kind of sell somebody on an Umpqua Valley Cab Franc, because they're not expecting it. A Pinot Noir, yeah, that's interesting. And I think it's just a matter of time before we become known for the diversity of varieties that we can grow here.
Now, Allie, you came from Washington State. Your family's got a winery there. Talk about the differences between Umpqua Valley wine and what you experienced where you're from.
Yeah, so speaking of Pinot Noir, we don't grow much Pinot Noir in Walla Walla. And the Walla Walla Valley does span both Oregon and Washington, which is somewhat unique. The Gorge does that as well. But the climate is not quite right to grow Pinot, where here we have such a variety in the terroir, there's that word again, both in the climate and the topography, to plant Pinot where it is going to do well within the Umpqua Valley. So, you know, up north we have Elkton, which is still part of the Umpqua Valley, and they're doing a lot of cooler climate wines up there, meaning Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris. And, you know, those are can put up a fight with some of the best Willamette Valley Pinot Noirs. And then way down south, you know, we've got Abacella doing their Tempranillo and their Albarino and varieties that you would see in a warmer region. So just that diversity, as Scott was saying, we don't necessarily, you know, find that in Walla Walla. The other thing I really appreciate about this valley is people historically have wanted to try different grapes. So we have somewhat obscure varietals that you're not too familiar with, like Bacco Noir, where we have at least, you know, five wineries producing a Bacco Noir wine, which a lot of people have never heard of. It's a red grape, by the way. And, you know, you don't see as much exploration in Walla Walla. It tends to be, you know, the Cabernet, the Merlot, the Cab Franc, or Bordeaux blend, you know, that sort of thing. So I just like kind of the pioneering mentality of the folks over here.
You know, speaking of Washington, I ran across something on OPV today, and I've heard it pronounced two different ways, the name of the winery, but that they're kind of downsizing. Scott, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so that was some news that just recently came out about St. Michel reducing their volume. You know, St. Michel is by far the largest winery in Washington and really built the Washington wine industry. Other wineries have come along and done an exceptional job, especially improving the quality and the image of Washington wines. Certainly where Ali came from in Walla Walla is sort of the epicenter of that. And I think these medium-sized wineries will grow into some of that volume as they grow. I also think, you know, we've seen this before in my past life in California. You'll see some of those vineyards probably get pulled out and replanted to other crops, you know, maybe orchards or maybe go back to wheat. And so it's unfortunate, especially for the Washington growers, but, you know, it is a cyclical business and how supply and demand, you know, affects things.
Do you see any, Oregon growers picking up some of these grapes?
I don't think there'll be much of that. It's just a totally different animal, and then it's fairly remote. You know, I've thought about, well, it would be interesting to play with the rocks or something. That's an 8-hour drive. You know, and to go bring fruit down 8 hours is a little bit different than
each way.
Yeah, each way, exactly. So it's certainly a lot of people play up there, and I think it's an exciting area. But most of us Oregon winemakers are pretty steadfast to do Western Oregon style.
About a minute and a half left, Ali. Talk about some things that you have coming up with the wine growers.
Yeah, so we have a few harvest events coming up at Melrose Vineyards. They'll have their annual grape stomp on Saturday, September 30th. That's when customers can actually stomp on grapes. So make sure you wash your feet, please. And then Music in the Vines is also starting at Melrose next Thursday. And Bradley Vineyards is having their 40th anniversary up in Elkton. That's happening on Saturday, August 26th. There'll be sparkling wine that they'll be releasing, plus some cake and music from Vine Cats.
You know, that is such a cool place. I went through there once, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. You know, kind of quiet and small, but had some good wine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, off the beaten path.
30 seconds left. Scott, final thoughts about what's ahead for the local industry.
Yeah, I can't tell you enough how excited I am to have Ali as a part of the industry. And the Umpqua Valley is really looking forward to taking that next step and becoming a brand that everybody knows. And we've seen wine change the face of many areas in the world. But I think, you know, the things that tourists want to come wine taste are really great things for the locals as well. You know, great restaurants, great places to go enjoy, and you know, breweries and all kinds of fun experiences. So I think, you know, we're just at the beginning of another step in the beautiful Oregon, you know, Umpqua Valley wine industry.
All right, Scott Kelly, Ali Rogers. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.